WNOV 860 and W293CX 106.5, Milwaukee. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not reflect that of the staff and management of WNOV and W293CX 106.5 FM Courier Communications, Milwaukee, but are the sole comments of the hosts and guests of this particular show.
Coming up on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, we're going to discuss what the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen are before you go purchase produce at the store.
And we're also going to talk about organic fertilizer versus chemical fertilizer and the difference so you can make an educated decision.
We're going to talk all about roses with Rosarians Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byrington.
Plus your tweets, emails, and phone calls with your questions.
Tell your gardening friends that Garden Radio is on the airways. It all starts right now.
You're tuned in to the only vegetable gardening radio show in Milwaukee with your host, Joey Baird, who grew up in the country but now lives closer to the city, and Hallie Baird, who has always been a city girl. Combined, they have over 25 years of gardening experience who believe in simple gardening practices. A gardener for all gardeners, founders of the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, where they created over 800 how-to garden videos to teach others how to grow more of what they eat. Join them for the next hour as they discuss vegetable gardening and more.
Wherever you may be listening, however you may be listening, this is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show. Whether you're on 860 AM or 106.5 FM, through the social media apps, through the Simple Radio app, the TuneIn app, through the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com radio tab, we are live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Happy to teach you and help you with your gardening problems. The WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening. 840 videos, email, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and a whole lot more, all for free. Next to me is my wife, best friend, gardening partner, and co-host,
Hallie Baird.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show is made possible by sponsors you'll hear throughout the program.
Nacelle Kombucha is the executive sponsor of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show. Nacelle is made in Wisconsin with local tea and natural herbs. Look for it in the refrigerator aisle at your local grocer. If you don't see it, ask for it, because if it's not Nacelle Kombucha, it's not kombucha. Find more information at nacelle.com.
And there's a number of ways in which you can contact us here during the program. You don't have to wait to the last 10 minutes to call us with your gardening questions. You can call us right now on the ivyorganics.com hotline, if you'd like to do that.
So you can call into the Ivy Organic hotline at 414-444-5250. Ivy Organic 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents. Protects newly installed plants and trees. Shields pruned and damaged surfaces. For use on your roses, fruit, and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs, this product is non-toxic, environmentally friendly, safe, and organic. For more information, visit ivyorganics.com.
You can also tweet us at TWVG. You can email us at TWVGradio@gmail.com, and we can acknowledge your tweet or your email and help you with your question. Or if you just want to say hi, we have a number of talks this year, which you can find all under the Come See Us tab on our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. We picked up another one this week. But this weekend on Wednesday at 6 p.m., we'll be at New Berlin Public Library. We were just there a couple weeks or a week or so ago, and we'll be there again this Wednesday on growing potatoes in containers and in the ground, how to grow the most successful potatoes. And then April 17th, West Bend Public Library, 7 p.m., the same topic, growing potatoes in the ground and in containers. And then at the end of the month, we'll be back at New Berlin. We'll be back at West Bend. So hopefully we will see you there on those talks. If you have a garden group, club, business, organization in which you would like us to talk gardening to, you can contact us via our website under the speaking request tab. It lists all the topics that we talk about, as well as we can specifically create one just for your occasion, or you can just send an email at twvgradio@gmail.com. Well, we're going to cover a topic in which was brought up, Holly brought this up to one of the callers a couple weeks ago, which is the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. Now, what are these categories, Holly?
Okay, so there's a group called the Environmental Working Group, and they've been doing this for years, and it's called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. It's the shopper's guide to pesticides and produce.
Now, first of all, this is not a list of produce in which when you go down to the organic aisle at Woodman's are beans and barley. This is the inorganic vegetables. These are the ones that are deemed that have not been certified organic at all. So keep that in mind.
Right. So if you're just buying regular at the store.
The big box big grocery box, store. Yeah.
You know, wherever. And you're not in the organic section, just in the
conventional.
And this is based on the analysis of the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Pesticide Data Program report.
So this is not something that's a couple kids at a high school decided, hey, we're just going to do some tests. These are stringent tests that are performed to see how much toxicity is in these inorganic vegetables that these farmers and growers spray on them to control pests or other non-healthy ways to grow this stuff.
Now, let's keep in mind here that this is after they have been washed and not just like rinsed off. They've been washed with a high power kitchen washer.
So we're not really sure how much power has been blasted at these. But the reason why this is noted is because they take as they want to make sure that they have give the fruit and the vegetables every opportunity to wash off any residue that's on the skins. Not just by rinsing under the faucet, but intensely spraying and try to get anything off, and then they test it. And this is after that intenseness, because not everybody that buys their produce goes home and scrubs and scrubs and scrubs. They just rinse it off and they go with it, and that's
if they rinse it.
If they rinse it off. So we're going to go with the Dirty Dozen, the most highest level of toxicity in these fruits and vegetables after they've been pressure washed or high intensity cleaned. Of the inorganic varieties in which you'll buy at your big box grocery store.
Right. So let's go with the Dirty Dozen first. And number one is strawberries, which is no surprise. And a lot of these are also based on the fact that they don't have an outer coating. They're just a soft body fruits or vegetable. And so that's a lot of reasons why they're going to have that residue.
Spinach is another one. Nectarines, apples, peaches, celery, grapes, and again, all thinned or very no-skinned produce here, pears, cherries, tomatoes, which tomatoes, if you've ever bought a tomato at the grocery store, you would have just about the same taste and nutritional value as eating a slice of cardboard because they are absolutely horrible because they pick them green, they gas them to get them to ripen, on the way to the market or thereabouts. So when you pick it up, it looks red, but it tastes just horrible. Let's see, what else we got? Sweet bell peppers is another one. Potatoes is another one that's in the Dirty Dozen. Potatoes, a lot of these inorganic potatoes are sprayed with a growth inhibitor, and that is a chemical in which prevents the eyes to being sprouted. See, if you go to Woodman's and buy organic potatoes or beans and barley and buy organic potatoes, you let them sit on the counter for about a week and you start seeing the little eyes, the little buds, because they're organic. They grow very rapidly. If they're sprayed with a growth inhibitor, they can sit on your shelf, and some of you have got these potatoes that sat there for weeks, if not months, and have never sprouted. And that's that inhibitor that they spray on them to prevent those from growing. And then some of these potato producers, and you can see documentaries online on how French fries are made in one of the bigger fast food restaurants. We won't name the name, but it's the St. Louis Arch, but double.
And these videos talk about how they go into the field, they spray the pesticides, and they're not doing this in jeans and a t-shirt. They're wearing like a full body coverage suit. And they're spraying the pesticides, and then they leave
hazmat
them sit.
Suit.
Yeah, hazmat suit, thank you. And they leave them sit there for a couple days.
And you can't fake something like that. I mean, I grew up on a farm, and I understand, and we'll talk about GMOs next week. But I understand all of that goes on, and the reasons why, the reasons why the farmer's hands are tied. But we'll get into that next week. But
right, and you know, it's at this point, I don't know if you want to call that a potato or not, and. I mean,
But keep this in mind. I mean, we all eat, you know, all this, and the strawberry ones are no surprise to us because our niece, she's six now, when she eats conventional strawberries from the store, she has a breakout. She has a rash. When she eats strawberries that we have grown in our garden, she has no issue whatsoever. Perfectly fine. So there's something in those strawberries that are coming from these mega farms that are causing the reaction. We're not doctors or anything, but we've seen that over the years, the more levels of high toxicity in these foods, the more problems these kids and even young adults are having with diseases and sicknesses. But that's another topic for another day. So let's go with the clean 15. These are the good guys. These are the ones that after all this process, the scrubbing, are the cleanest of the inorganic. So if you're not going to buy organic, you want to, these are the 15 vegetables and fruits that I would recommend buying that are the cleanest of the level of the ones that have been sprayed with a chemical.
And I just want to note here before we go over these that you can find this information online through the Environmental Working Group, or you can just search like Clean 15, Dirty Dozen.
And they update this every year.
Right. They do this every year. So this group is the Clean 15. So this is sweet corn, avocados, pineapples, cabbage, onions, frozen sweet peas, papayas, asparagus, mangoes, eggplant, honeydew, kiwi, cantaloupe, cauliflower, and grapefruit. And most of these have an outer skin.
Yeah,
that's where a lot of the pesticides cannot get into them.
So, you know, that's a list of the healthier variety. And the reason why the frozen peas are on there, because 95% of peas that are sold in the stores are frozen, because that's the longevity. That's how they're best kept. So with that being said, we got a lot of good things and a lot of bad things. But again, if you want to avoid pesticides, organic, certified organic is the way to go. And the reason why is because even if you don't like the government, okay, and there's a lot of opinions there, there is a stringent requirement of these farmers in order, and a lot of paperwork and red tape they have to go through in order to be certified organic. You can't be certified organic and spray or use a liquid fertilizer like that miracle stuff. And we'll talk about that in the second segment because it's inorganic. There's a level in which they have to achieve. Otherwise, they cannot be certified organic.
And I just want to note that some representative from the Environmental Working Group does state that you should wash them no matter what, just because you can reduce pesticide exposure. So if you don't think, okay, I bought strawberries that are conventional, well, I might as well eat them, you could wash them, and then that would help reduce the pesticides on them.
Absolutely. Wash any of the stuff. Now, obviously, the cantaloupe or the thick skin stuff, if you're not eating the skin, you know, peel it off. But, again, it wouldn't hurt to wash it because the contamination from the peeling to the flesh or on your hands can also be deemed, you know, it can be transferred over, and we want this to be as healthy as possible. Well, coming up in after the break, we're going to discuss and let you make the educational decision on whether you should use chemical fertilizers in your garden or organic. We'll let that decision be up to you, but we'll give you both sides right after this.
Have a gardening question? Email Joey and Holly at twvgradio@gmail.com.
Mantis Plant Protection professional-grade organic pest control solutions. They offer Mantis EC concentrated or ready-to-use spray, certified organic and environmentally friendly insect killer. Gentle on pollinators and other organisms, but effective in killing soft-bodied insects and spider mites fast. Safe around your children and pets. They also have the cleanest and whitest diatomaceous earth on the market. Visit MantisPP.com to receive a free organic pesticide cheat sheet, which is a list of organic insecticides that are used effectively and kills insects fast. Visit MantisPP.com to download it today.
Do you have a problem with deer or small herbivores eating your vegetation? There is a natural solution that is safe for your pets and family. Bobex is the answer. An environmentally friendly solution to protect your plants, will not wash off, and is guaranteed. Bobex Deer was independently tested against 9 known competitors and rated 93% effective, second only to a physical barrier. Bobex can be used on all types of ornamentals, trees, and shrubs. Ask for it by name at your local independent garden center. Find out more, visit bobex.com. B-O-B-B-E-X.com.
The international food selection at Woodman's is more than just salsa and soy sauce. We stock a huge selection of foods and ingredients from all over the world. Whether it's Asian, Latin American, European, or Middle Eastern, Woodman's has it. Plus, each store has its own unique selection. With Woodman's, you don't need to visit multiple stores to get what you need. We have everything you need under one roof and at a great price.
Do you want your next raised beds to be easy, functional, and beautiful? The Embrace helps you create the garden you've always wanted. Finally, raised beds that everyone can assemble and enjoy. No tools needed. Just slide any lumber into the Embrace corner, fill with your favorite soil mix, and you're ready to plant. Made from 100% recycled steel right here in the USA. And a portion of every sale helps to build school and community gardens all across the country. Let the Embrace help you create your next raised bed. Grow beautifully with the Embrace, available at local garden centers and online at artofthegarden.net.
Hi, I'm John Lewandowski, retail manager of Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center. Now, I'm not going to tell you about our awesome dome-grown plants, our beautiful pottery, or our 40 varieties of landscape materials. What I am going to tell you is that Blue Mel's is a local, independent, family-owned garden center that truly cares about your garden or landscape project. So if you're looking for that one garden center that actually cares about you, come to Blue Mel's Garden and Landscape Center. We've been treating our customers like family since 1955.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Hallie Baird.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show right here on 860 WNOV and W293CX 106.5. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener.com, your destination for all things gardening. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, 845 videos now. Digital magazines, all for free, all to help you. Well, to help you eat better, you can have fresh produce drove right to your neighborhood in just a matter of a few weeks with TreeRipe.com.
If you like fresh produce delivered right to your neighborhood, you should check out Tree Ripe Citrus Company. You can find out where to pick up top quality produce from tree-ripe.com. They have beautifully tasty peaches and juicy sweet blueberries. If you're sick of bland, mealy peaches and lackluster blueberries from your local grocer, Tree Ripe has what you need. They come right to a stop in your neighborhood, fresh off the truck, right from the source. For location and schedules, visit tree-ripe.com. They have locations all over, including Iowa, Upper and Lower Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois, and right here in Wisconsin. TreeRipe.com is your place to go for fresh produce around.
And you can find all the links to all the wonderful sponsors that make this show possible under the radio tab on our website. And you can also get downloadable podcasts as well as in-studio video of what goes on during the show right there as well. So we're going to inform you. We're going to give you the information so you can be informed, so you can make the educational decision, I guess that's the right term, of whether or not you want to use chemical fertilizer or organic fertilizers on your garden. And we're going to give you the definition of both of them, and then we're going to go over some of the pros and cons of both, because many things in life, whether you hate that topic or hate that particular thing, most times, not all the time, there's a good thing about something bad, and there's a bad thing about something bad. So we're going to go over all of this. So what is these definitions, Holly, of, let's start with a chemical fertilizer.
So a chemical fertilizer is defined as an inorganic material of wholly or partially synthetic origin that is added to soil to sustain plant growth, which basically means it's made out of something that's inorganic.
Okay.
Essentially. Organic fertilizers are substances that are derived from the remains of byproducts of natural organisms which contain the essential nutrients for plant growth, which means that they are made from something that
once was living,
essentially.
Whether plant or animal based.
Right.
Okay. So now that that's been said, you can, let's go over some of the advantages of organic fertilizer. Now, we use, and this is our outlook or our perspective, we grow everything organically because we're going to eat it. Now, there are people on the internet and YouTube and TV that says, you know, there's nothing wrong with the chemical fertilizers. You can use chemical or organic. Either way is fine. It's your decision. Well, it is your decision, but I want to, you know, if you at all possible can grow organically, because 50 years ago, well, before World War II, there was no such thing as chemical fertilizers. That all derived from World War II. And maybe we can get into that in a future episode with the Victory Garden, all that stuff. But that's where all this came from.
Right. And just before we get to that, nitrogen is it lives in the air.
Okay.
It's a gas. And it is combined with a source of hydrogen gas, and that is made a reaction to form ammonia.
Okay.
So an ammonia is a common use in an organic or chemical fertilizer. So it's kind of a more science-based thing versus an environmental science, which is the organic fertilizer.
And you've got a degree in environmental science. I don't. I keep things simple, and you make, you know, you take what I say and actually have proof to it. So let's go over a couple of these advantages if you're going to decide to grow organically.
Okay, so organic fertilizer is better for the soil. It is, since it's organic, it's going to work with your soil together to improve your soil.
With the microorganisms in the soil.
It has a slower nutrient release, so the plants are able to use what they need throughout the season.
So you can't over-fertilize with organic. With synthetic fertilizers, a lot of those are liquid-based or water-soluble, and that is instantly available for the plant to pick up. It doesn't matter. The plant's going to suck it up right away, and then the plant becomes dependent, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But essentially, it's, for example here, and many of you are probably not farmers, but cows have the tendency, if you don't, a new cow, if you don't control how much they eat, they will eat until they literally eat themselves to death. So you have to control what you feed them, or incorporate enough actual salt in the food to where they will stop eating and go drink, and then that will kind of divide their meals up. So it's the same thing with plants. If you give them that liquid fertilizer, they're going to suck it all up whether they need it or not. Kind of an analogy there, but I think it makes sense.
Right. So then there's going to be trace minerals that are left behind in your soil, which improves your soil. They won't burn. You really can't burn your plants with organic fertilizer. They're long-lasting, and that goes along with the nutrient release. There's fewer applications required. So once your soil is at a healthy condition, it's easier to maintain that level with less work.
At a healthy level, that's if you take a soil test from the local university. There are soil tests now available. You can purchase through Amazon for about $30, and they'll give you what you need, what you don't need, the levels in which your soil is. So if your soil is healthy enough, you don't have to add fertilizer. You don't have to add compost because you have very enriched based natural soil, but not every backyard is that way.
No, you're going to have stronger plants and grass. And the reason for this is, and we're going to talk about this on the backside here, but your plants are not going to be dependent on that fertilizer. Over time, your soil is going to build up, and your plants are going to become stronger and more reliant on the organic material versus if you had a chemical fertilizer.
Now, let's take a look. Let's give chemical fertilizer its few moments here. Advantages of using chemical fertilizer versus organic fertilizer.
I just want to say one thing real quick.
Yeah.
The organic will encourage soil life, and we'll talk about that as well with the some of the disadvantages to the chemical fertilizer. Go ahead.
So advantages to the chemical fertilizer, these are positives. It's readily available in most forms, liquid and well as granule. It's a fast acting, usually within a few days to a week to two, and you can apply it throughout the season. Ease of application with a spreader, which you can kind of do that with the organic variety as well. And easy settings. It's easy to calculate how much you need, which is on the back of your organic fertilizer is the same way.
Now, it says inexpensive, and I would say that's kind of a gray area. It might be cheaper to buy the fertilizer, but in the end,
in the long run,
it's not.
If you're applying the fertilizer every 2 weeks throughout the summer, let's say there's, pick a number, 20 weeks, you're applying it 10 weeks out of the year, when in the organic variety, if you're applying it once every 3 months, you do the math. What's going to be cheaper there? So that's some of the advantages to possibly using chemical fertilizer. Now,
so some disadvantages.
There are disadvantages to organic fertilizer.
Okay, so that slow to release nutrients, cooler soil temperatures will not be as necessarily conductive to the release of the organic fertilizer. So that's something to keep in mind.
More expensive. I disagree with that. Organic fertilizers, just like everything else in the world, electronics is coming down in price as more and more people start using it. So pets may be attracted to it, yes, because of that organic, it's derived from that organic material, as well as it can attract some bugs, but proper garden maintenance, you're going to have good bugs and bad bugs, so that's okay.
It's important to say here that animal manures that are not fully composted can cause problems like burn, or like we had talked to, we talked about previously, if the animal was fed something with a persistent herbicide, and it, even though it goes through their digestive system, it could still show up in your plants.
Months to years later. So, disadvantages of the chemical fertilizers are the following.
So, water soluble, which means that what will happen is they will rinse away.
And it dissolves in the water, you water your plants, and that runoff is what can go in the sewers, and then it ends up in the dead zone there in the Gulf of Mexico. And if you've not seen the dead zone, you can Google that, and it shows you over the last three or four decades what has happened. And this is not just a prime result from fertilizers of chemicals in backyard gardens. This is also agricultural chemical runoff as well.
It's also things like in soap.
In
soap,
okay.
Yeah. So there's a short lifespan, and it doesn't build up soil. Basically, it can – actually, I was going to do the other two together.
Okay,
but
all right.
It doesn't build up soil and can decrease soil fertility. Those two go together. The elements contribute nothing to enhance the soil fertility, and the nitrogen stimulates the growth of – it doesn't stimulate the growth of the good things in your soil. So it just stimulates the growth of your plants. So it harms your soil.
The salt burn risk. Synthetic fertilizers is a salt over conventional or organic varieties can cause dehydration in plant tissue and destroy them. Well, if you apply too much fertilizer of any type, a lot of these have minerals in them, and minerals are derived as basically some of a salt. So you want to, and that's why the back of fertilizer bags have instructions on them, to apply them according to the manufacturer's recommendation. And just because you buy one variety or one type of fertilizer from company A, that doesn't mean all the varieties or all the types of fertilizers from company A all have the same instructional applicational rate on it. So that's you got to watch for that.
Another good point here is a lot of people, they take a lot of high energy consumption to make chemical fertilizer. And a lot of people grow their own food, not only to be healthy, but also so that you don't have to have a long traveling time from where your vegetables come from. And so with the high energy consumption, that's something to think about if you're, you know, environmentally aware, environmentally conscious, aware about what gas is being burned and things like that. That's something to think about with chemical fertilizers.
Well, hopefully that has enlightened you and to make some type of decision whether or not you want to grow organically or inorganically. And whether you put organic or inorganic fertilizer on your lawn, you're going to have to cut it at some point. And when you cut your grass, you might as well do it right. You might as well do it fast. And you might as well do it with the best equipment there is on the market.
Right. So do you hear that? That's your neighbor shaking in their grass-stained shoes because Aaron's is about to help you set up your grass-cutting game. Your name is on the mailbox, so Aaron's name should be on your mower. Heavy-duty steel construction, smarter, smoother controls, professional cutting performance. The only thing we love more than the smell of freshly cut grass is the sweet taste of victory. Aaron's, it comes down to this. Visit Aaron's.com to find your local dealer for lawn and snow removal equipment.
So with that being said, coming up after the break, we're going to talk roses with Rosarian Chris Van Cleve from Alabama and Teresa Byrington from Indiana, two of the nation's leading rosarians, right after this.
Tweet Joey and Holly using hashtag TWVG.
Oh, yeah. What you say? You say Nasala Kombucha. It'll put some glide in your stride and some pep in your step. Nasala Kombucha. Yeah.
Nasala Kombucha makes your body happy. Nasala Kombucha makes your body smile.
Ah.
Hotchin Mill, 125 years of experience producing stone ground organic flour and cornmeal made from premium quality whole grains. Family owned company, continual standards that are non-GMO, organic at the highest safety levels, offering a wide variety of flours, pasta, baking mixes, flaxseed, and more, even kosher and gluten-free options. Found at most local grocers like Woodman's. For more information and recipes, visit HotchinMill.com. That's HotchinMill.com.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com.
Do you have a little space to grow? Check out Greenstock Vertical Gardens at GreenstockGarden.com. Greenstock is engineered to grow with its innovative space and water-saving design. You can grow vegetables, flowers, herbs, and even strawberries in just 2 square feet of space. Grow up instead of out. Perfect for the porch, patio, or deck. Grow up to 30 plants in a small space. GreenstockGarden.com has everything you need to grow in the littlest of spaces. Proudly made in the USA. For more information and to purchase, visit GreenstockGarden.com.
Now back to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Baird.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, videos, and a whole lot more to help you grow more of what you like to eat and want to eat. Well, when it comes to garden centers, the official garden center of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener is Bluemel's, and we like to do things right, and Bluemel's likes to do things right, and we like to be treated like friends and family, even to strangers and from strangers to us. And Bluemel's is the same way. Whether you've been there for the first time or the 500th time, they will treat you as if you were coming to their Thanksgiving dinner, the family members that you like to have come for Thanksgiving. Bluemel's can be found on 4930 West Loomis Road in Greenfield, and they can supply all your gardening needs. Bluemel's.com at 414-282-4220. Their bulk delivery is now available. You can go to Bluemel's.com, see all of their varieties of sand, compost, wood chips. They have all that. That's all available right now to deliver right to your driveway to get your gardens and your landscape started for the 2017 growing season.
Okay, so we want to welcome Teresa Byington. She is a master gardener rosarian from Brownsburg, Indiana. She's the co-host of Rose Chat Radio broadcast and brings a wealth of garden knowledge and garden inspiration to the Rose Chat family. She and her husband enjoy a garden of over 200 roses. And if for more information about the Rose Chat podcast, that's at rosechat.podbean.com. Welcome to the program, Teresa.
Hey guys, how are you doing up there? Is it warming up?
It's warming up very nicely. I think the cold is past, and I'm going to say that, and I'll cross my fingers, but I think we're going to go.
We're going with it, too. We're getting some warm temperatures. We've had lots and lots of rain, but today we're in the garden.
Well, Teresa, for those who have never ever grown roses before, what is the number one thing that they need to know before they go to our the official garden center of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener radio show, Bluemel's, and just grab a rose? What is the first thing they need to know?
Well, you need to think location, location, location. You know, do a bit of research. You want to choose a rose that's suited for your growing zone and the space or the container that you plan to use. Now, I go to California a lot, and I see a lot of beautiful roses out in California that are not suited to the Midwest. So you need to know, read the labels, know what rose is going to do well in your growing zone. And with most plants, picking the right rose for the right place is key.
Right. Okay. That's great. Now, what preparation goes into planting a rose bush successfully? Full sun, shade, type of soil? How can one be successful in planting a rose bush?
Well, you know, like most blooming plants, we know they love sun. And roses really love sun. They love 6 to 8 hours per day. They like a rich, loamy soil that's going to drain well. Roses like water. They like to be watered, but they don't want wet feet. Most plants don't. You know, that's setting them up to just to rot in the ground. So well-drained soil is great. Adding organic matter, just like you would with any other plant that you're going to expect great things from, because we know that what happens under the ground is going to reflect very quickly what happens above the ground, especially after the first couple of years when those roots start growing. They need something yummy to grow in.
So you spoke about, you know, location and the type of rose, but also our listeners may not be aware of this. Roses just don't all have that same fragrance. I mean, you can choose whatever color you want, but also there's a lot of reviews online. Some are more potent. Some have very little smell to mm-hmm. those roses.
You know, knowing what you want your rose to do, there's roses that are going to give you a pop of color in the landscape, but probably won't be they won't be the most fragrant of roses. There's roses with old garden roses. They're going to be very fragrant, but they're only going to bloom one time for you. Then they're going to make you a nice shrub, just like a lilac would. There are hybrid teas that, you know, if you're going to, you want to show roses in a rose show, a beautiful hybrid tea, and most of them, many of them are fragrant. So, you know, reading the label, not all roses are fragrant. They're, you know, some are going to give you a few blooms, a few perfect blooms. Some are going to give you just a cascade of blooms. So what you want your rose to do, if you want your rose to climb a fence, you need to look for a climbing rose. So the research that you're going to do prior to planting your rose is going to give you that information.
Now, with roses, and I'm assuming this is the same with a lot of flowers, there's a certain time period in which these things bloom. A bloom is only going to be a bloom for so many days, and then based on the variety in which you purchase, some of them may bloom throughout the season or only in a couple of weeks span. Am I right or wrong on that?
Well, there are one-time bloomers, just like lilacs and mock oranges and things like that. Primarily, that's the old garden roses. Those are the roses that date back before 1867, when La France, the first hybrid tea, came into being. Those roses are going to give you amazing fragrance and just a shock and awe of bloom. Huge shrubs that are just covered in bloom. I call them my spring fireworks. But those old garden roses, while they'll give you all the fragrance and exciting blooms, they're only going to be around for about 4 or 5 weeks. But then there's the shrub roses, and they're ever-blooming. You're going to get just – I have some of the shrub roses in my garden right now, and they're going to bloom most of the summer. They're going to take a little break, but most bloom cycles are 4 to 6 weeks in between. So you have a big flush of color, and then they're going to take a break. You're going to trim off those dead heads and give them, you know, a little extra fertilizer, and another 4 to 6 weeks you're going to have blooms again. So. In my climate, I'm going to get about, on a traditional rose, I'm going to get about 3, maybe 4 bloom cycles.
Now, we'll talk about deadheading in a moment, but you said the one-time bloom, that's once a year. I've read that there's some varieties that bloom once and that's it. Am I wrong on this, or did I misread that, that it's a one-time bloom, it's done, and the plant's...
Yes.
Okay. What would be the, what's the purpose of purchasing a rose that blooms one time ever and that's it?
Well, in my garden, I have a lot of historical roses, and they only bloom one time. But again, they are the fragrant roses, and they're the roses with the history. Some of them date back to the 1400s. There's legends about these roses, and that's the kind of thing that I invite into my garden. They're beautiful, they're fragrant, but they're also historical, and they're just rich with legend and history. And that just makes my gardening experience more well-rounded. So I love that. I love that. You know, I invite lilacs into my garden. They only bloom for 4 or 5 weeks, but I still love lilacs. So the old garden roses are that way. You're only going to get that one big flush, but boy, when they bloom, they bloom.
And I want to clarify, that's one bloom a year. It's not once the entire lifespan of the plant. That's once a year.
No.
Okay.
No, it's just like a lilac. They're going to come back next spring and next spring and next spring. Some of them have been around for, you know, generations and much more than that. So, yes, you're going to enjoy that rose for many, many years.
Now, some people have unopened or distorted blooms. What causes this typically, and what is a good remedy for it?
Well, in my neck of the woods, the things that we deal with that are going to give you that problem are aphids, which, you know, they don't just attack roses, other things, and thrips. And my biggest problem, I don't have a lot of thrips, but with aphids, they're just going to suck the life out of that little bud. So it's just not going to develop. So with aphids, they're easy to get rid of. You can splash them with some water in the hose. You can squish them. You know, that's kind of therapeutic sometimes. But mostly what I do for any of those type of insects, I'm going to use a solution of soapy water. And that's about 4 tablespoons of, I use Dr. Bronner's peppermint, actually, smells great, into a gallon of water. And that's going to take care of them. You know, I'm just not a big insecticide person because where do you stop? You know, an insecticide, you know, it's going to just throw a blanket over all insects. And we want to invite the good insects into our gardens. And good insects like lacewings and ladybugs, they're going to munch on those aphids and those thrips for you.
Now, you obviously have quite a large garden with 200 roses. For people who are more maybe in an urban setting who would like to have that rose, who remember grandma or mom having a rose or roses and doesn't have the space available, can you grow roses in a container? And if so, what are some of the guidelines that one needs to follow?
Well, you know, it's going to take, for an old garden rose, they typically get large. I have a lot of rugosas and old garden roses, and they typically get large. But you can grow them in a container, but you're going to need a container that's going to be 15 gallon or more. So it's going to be sort of a, you know, a semi-permanent planting on a balcony or deck or wherever you want them. I have lots of big roses in containers, and they do very well, even though I have to bring them in the winter. But we have gotten very good at putting them on those handy little caddies with rollers. I'm telling you, that's changed our life. But when planting a rose in a container, the thing that you want to remember is you want room for those roots to grow for at least a couple of 3 years before you have to repot. And you want a real light potting medium. That's something that's going to have perlite and vermiculite and those kinds of things in it. So it's going to drain well. It's not going to be so heavy. You want to be able to get your nutrients through to those roots. So a good quality container soil is just, you know, something very important. Don't use soil from your garden. That just would not work in a pot.
Okay. Now, when it comes to something like deadheading your roses, what's kind of the best way to do that?
I'm sure there's a wrong way and there's a right way. What is the right way so we don't make the mistake first?
Well, I really don't think you can make a mistake. If the bloom is dead, trim it off. You know, I do more of just shaping my plants. I don't do a lot of specific, you know, I'm going to take off those dead heads because if they start making hips, then they're just going to slow down their production of blooms for sure. But there really isn't a right way and a wrong way. You, for most of the shrub or the modern roses today, which are a lot of the ones that I have, you're really going to shape your plant, keep it healthy. Anything that's kind of crossing over one cane to the other, you want to trim those out, kind of open up the center a little bit just for air circulation, just for the overall health. Anything that's too dinky or doesn't look healthy, take that out. But for the most part, you're going to get those dead heads off and retain the shape and size of the plant that you want.
Well, we appreciate the information, Teresa, about roses. Now, for people who want to catch your podcast with Chris, where's the best place they can go? And you guys are rose, and more roses, anything and everything you want to know.
Yes, we talk about all, anyone wants to talk about roses, we're ready to go. It's rosechatpodcast.com.
Okay. Well, Teresa, we're very happy that you have joined us on the program, and thank you for taking time. And when we come back, it's your garden questions and our garden answers.
Thank you, Teresa.
Have a good day, guys.
Have a gardening question? You can call into the ivorganic.com hotline at 414-444-5250 right now.
Beans and Barley Market and Cafe, a neighborhood specialty grocery store for the east side of the greater Milwaukee area, where you can find all you need, from fresh produce to bakery to organic frozen dinners, from wine to fresh squeezed carrot juice. A health food store with hundreds of products, vitamin supplements, bath and body items, magazines, cards, books, and a knowledgeable staff. Catering available, open daily at 8 a.m. The restaurant serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week with a menu of good, healthy homemade food, including vegetarian and non-vegetarian specialties. 1901 East North Avenue, Milwaukee, 414-278-7878, and online at beansandbarley.com. Really Granola is a small batch Wisconsin-made granola available at reallygranola.com. This granola uses many organic ingredients and features Wisconsin products such as beautiful red Wisconsin cranberries, local honey, and other delicious Wisconsin products. You'll find plenty of fiber and protein in Really Granola, which makes it a great way to start or end your day. This granola is baked in a Wisconsin co-packing kitchen that helps to employ disabled workers. Find Really Granola near you or to buy online, visit reallygranola.com. Mycorrhizae is a beneficial fungus from plantsuccess.com that will greatly increase your plant's germination ability and a healthier root structure. You can increase seed sprouting, root growth, and general plant germination. Mycorrhizae can be used with hydroponics, root cutting, seed sprouting, coco coir, and soil. Plantsuccess.com carries powder, granule, and tablet forms of mycorrhizae. Increase the level of mycorrhizae in your soil for your plants to give them the optimal opportunity to produce an incredible harvest. For more information and to purchase, visit plantsuccess.com.
Garden seeds do not have to cost a fortune. Just 99 cents at migardener.com. With over 300 varieties of non-GMO, heirloom, and organic flower, vegetable, and herb seeds available year-round, pay less and get more seeds. Shipping as low as $2.50. That just makes sense. Go to migardener.com for seeds and gardening needs, tools, and special blend fertilizer. migardener.com. It's that simple. Family owned and operated.
I want a garden center that listens to and understands my needs.
I want to buy my gardening products from a local business with strong ties to the community.
All I want is a garden center that truly values their customers.
It seems like everyone is selling plants these days, but I'm having a hard time finding quality.
I take pride in my garden, so I want my garden center to take pride in their products.
Where will you be going for all of your gardening needs this season? Blue Mel's Garden Center. We are your answer.
Blue Mel's, 4930 West Loomis Road, 414-282-4220.
Now back to two gardeners who understand where you're coming from.
We understand gardening can be difficult at times,
but you really get the reward when you put all that hard work in and then you get to reap the benefit of the harvest.
And sometimes it's not even a lot of hard work.
Joey and Holly Baird.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, 840-plus video, short and long format, and a whole lot more.
So this is the time for your questions and our answers. The IvyOrganic.com hotline is open and ready, 414-444-5250. Ivy Organic 3-in-1 Plant Guard naturally protects plants against damaging sunburn, insects, and rodents. Protects newly installed plants and trees, shields pruned and damaged surfaces for use on your roses, fruit, and nut trees, ornamental trees, and shrubs. This product is non-toxic, environmentally safe, and organic. For more information, visit ivorganics.com.
We had a number of questions come in on the TWVG radio email this week, as well as Facebook through the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener on the Facebook. But I do want to mention that we are heading to the garden. We are actually going to plant. We put our first seeds in the garden yesterday. I planted about 40 radishes in a giant grow bag, and we're going to plant peas today, lettuce, leaf lettuce, seed, and starts, as well as onions. And to make it easy on all of you, we're going to plant peas, too. We put videos out on Sunday afternoons. You can find how to plant peas tomorrow afternoon on the website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, YouTube, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener, as well as the Facebook page, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. And then Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, we'll have our how to plant onions from starts, our leaf lettuce, as well as radishes. So you can find out how to do all of that. The Sunday videos are fairly short. The Tuesday videos are more of a PBS type of format to get as much information to you as possible. So we are going to plant today. The temperatures are right. The long-term forecast shows everything's good. And Holly, what's a couple of questions here we have?
Sure. So we had this coming through an email. They are starting their first garden in a plot in a community garden this year. They are in zone 5A, which is essentially similar zone to us. They don't have access to it till May. They're told it was almost entirely full sun, and they're concerned about it possibly being clay soil. And so that was one of the questions.
Well, let's address that first. Clay soil is a difficult soil to grow in. It has a lot of nutrients, but it's all locked up real tight. So one thing you could do is buy just a bag of compost and mix it into the area in which you're going to plant. If you're going to dig a hole for a tomato, mix that compost in amongst the clay in that hole that you're going to plant with the fertilizer and all of that. Okay, so that's one thing.
Then the other
the full sun, that's fine. Full
right.
sun.
The other question was, should they choose a tilled plot or a non-tilled plot?
Well, in a community garden, you're kind of at the mercy of the people who run the community garden. I would recommend Okay. There's pros and cons to both this, so let me go over both of them. Tilled garden, they've already tilled it, they've already chopped off all the root follicles, and all of those root follicles will begin to create more plants, or more weeds, so you're gonna have more weeds in that garden bed that you have to weed. Non-tilled garden, a lot of those plants are beginning to get established with roots. You go in there with a garden fork, till that or loosen that soil up, remove all the roots and the weeds, and you're going to have a lot less weeding that you will have to do throughout the season because you're not dealing with the root follicles being chopped up and creating more weeds, more plants. So that hopefully that helps.
Okay. So another question is, what causes cracking or craving?
Cracking on tomatoes.
On the tops of the tomatoes on the vine where they're ripening. I can't seem to prevent this from happening. I water them once daily unless it has rained. Is this too often? And I only water the soil, not the plants themselves.
Well, the cracking is more, it happens mostly with the more heirloom variety tomatoes rather than the hybrid. And a lot of this cracking is just the way the plant grows. In addition to overwatering, you want your soil to stay damp, but you don't want the water to be over moist or soggy. Too much water at a time during a plant growth that too much water during a time where there has been no water can cause the tomato to crack. What happens is, you had 2 or 3 weeks of no water, it rains, all that plant is sucking up all the water it can. It makes the internal portions of the tomato grow quicker than the skins, and that's when you start getting cracking. And sometimes we've seen it where it blows out the bottom of the tomato and all the internal portions of the tomato winds up on the ground. So that is another reason why you want consistent water. And then this came on the YouTube channel, the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. What is the variety of white tomato that we grow?
So we grow the great white.
Giant white is another term.
We grow, and then there's a few other varieties, but we grow the great white.
It's a very sweet tomato. Last year was the first year we grew it. It's available at migardener.com. A very sweet, very meaty tomato, and it's actually a white tomato.
And I think it's less acidic. It seems like those yellow and white ones are less acidic than the red ones. So
it's a very unique variety, and
I don't want to say a mild tomato flavor, but it's definitely more sweet than like a Roma. Not that Romas are bitter or anything, but it just has a lot more sweetness.
Well, we're growing white tomatoes this year, and we're growing white cucumbers this year as well.
Oh, yeah, they're white cucumbers.
But the white cucumbers, you don't pickle them because they don't pickle very well, but they're very tasty raw. So some unique colors in the garden.
So our friend Timothy wants to know, what is the proper way to pick rhubarb so you can have it all season long and not to stunt the growth?
Okay, well, rhubarb, Holly's family apparently forbids rhubarb to be planted in the garden. I don't know what happened years ago. It must have been a big rhubarb. I don't know. But so we planted some in giant.
He's not lying. It's a true story.
Yeah. So we planted some rhubarb from seed that we started last year. We started this from seed. We planted it in giant containers. It was a 30-gallon Rubbermaid container and about 20-gallon plastic ceramic-looking container. And the book, you know, the book, the internet says, okay, after it gets cold, you remove the dead foliage on the top. You put it in a barn or a shed somewhere where it's dry and away from the elements. You keep it moist, but you don't let it dry out, and you bring it back out. Otherwise, the roots are going to freeze, and you're not going to have nothing. Wrong. We left it out because I wanted to see what was going to happen. We left it out in the yard, and it is coming back with vengeance. It is the prettiest rhubarb that has begun to sprout this year, and this year we'll actually be able to harvest it. From 18, when the stalks are 18 inches or longer, we'll be able to harvest it, as well as right now, today, we'll fertilize it with a half of a cup of organic all-purpose fertilizer in each container. Now, if you're in the ground, you can go ahead and do that too, but there's a lot more nutrient-based in the ground than in a container. Okay,
let's get
back to the question. I was so excited about the rhubarb. I don't know what happened in here. I don't know what... Okay.
Do not harvest any stalks during the first growing season.
Which we didn't.
Right? Your plants can become established.
And the first year, our plants got very, very large. Right. Last year, you know, probably 2 foot, 3 foot in diameter. We left it alone.
Okay. Harvest the stalks when they are 12 to 18 inches long. Usually after 3 years, the harvest period runs 8 to 10 weeks long. If the stalks become thin, stop harvesting. This means the plant's food reserves are low. And then when you harvest, you want to grab by the base of the stalk and pull it away from the plant with a gentle twist. You can also cut it too. So you don't want to... You don't want to just yank it. You want to be gentle.
You can dislodge the roots and start tearing roots on it.
And then you always want to leave at least two stalks per plant to ensure production. And that way you'll have a bountiful harvest up to 20 years. And you won't have to worry about replacing them until...
You can divide rhubarb at a certain point. But you don't have to worry about that right away. And if the rhubarb goes to seed, you're not harvesting it enough. The plant will feel that it's being... stressed because it's not being harvested, and then it will go ahead and go to seed. And you can still harvest, but you want to cut those seed heads back. Okay.
Okay, and then we have the final question here where we were in Sheboygan, they asked at the Straw Bale Gardening Talk. They want to plant their straw bales just right over the grass, and they want to know if they have to do anything to the grass below.
You don't have to do anything to the grass below. You could put some type of weed barrier or just some cardboard to smother the grass out, but you can set that bale right on the grass. It's not going to hurt anything. If you do have several rows of straw bales, let's say you have three straw bales in a space and three straw bales, you want it wide enough in which you can mow grass, or if you want to invest in wood chips, you can, you know, if it's a permanent, going to be every couple of years you're going to bring new straw bales in, you can go that route. But no, you don't have to do anything. And a lot of these straw bale gardeners who are in locations in which there is no, you know, rental property, they just put it right on their patio, porch, deck, driveway, and they can grow it that way as well. And it works very, very well. And again, these bales are going to last about 2 years. I've got one bale that we're going to look at today at the garden that maybe we can get 3 years out of it just because it was so densely packed when it was made in the baler that
One thing I want to note, if you are going to reuse your bales, you do not have to recondition them that second year.
Right. You want to keep that in mind so you don't have to rebuy the fertilizer in and getting that established. So
do we have a caller?
We have a caller. Okay.
Put them on. Hello?
Caller, you got a question or comment?
Yes, I wanted to ask about treated wood or what type of wood would be the best to put in a garden.
Okay. Treated wood 20 years ago was made with arsenic and creosote. Now the standards have changed, and it is treated with a copper fungicide. Scientific studies have shown that copper is one of the elements that plants need a certain amount to. But it doesn't leach into the soil to the point where it's harmful to you or anybody else. And the longevity of the treated wood is about 2 to 3 times longer than the regular pine wood or the yellow wood that you get at your garden center. And money-wise, if I was building a raised bed, I would go ahead and buy – I would have no problem using pressure-treated lumber now because it is safe to use because of that copper treatment rather than the pine wood, which you'd have to paint to get more longevity out of it or – it would rot, you know, in about 7 years. The treated wood, you can probably get 12 to 15 years out of it easy, if not more.
Okay. I have another question.
Yes.
What about dirt? What would be the best type of dirt to start with? And as far as fertilizer, is one better than the other, cow or horse manure?
Or what was the first question?
What type of dirt would be the best type?
Any type of organic. We use a plant-based soil. Blue Mills has a variety of different compost to pick from, but I would use a plant-based soil in order to keep away from the possible the pathogens and herbicides that animal manure has.
If you do use animal manure, just make sure that those animals haven't been fed with anything that has a persistent herbicide in it.
And just an all-balanced organic fertilizer is pretty much a good variety to choose. If you go to our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, we use Sustain, and there's a couple of places here in town that do sell that.
Okay.
Thank you. If you sponsors what make this show possible?
Nasala Kombucha is the executive sponsor of the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show. Nasala is made in Wisconsin with local tea and natural herbs. Look for it in the refrigerator aisle at your local grocer. If you don't see it, ask for it, because if it's not Nasala Kombucha, it's not kombucha. Find out more at nasala.com.
Programming note, next week, join us. We're going to talk all about mulch, the good and the bad that you can put in your garden, understanding genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, and Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television's host of Wisconsin Foodie, Kyle Creechy, will be with us. Miss any
Kyle Cherick.
Sorry. What is that? Kyle.
Kyle Cherick.
Miss any portion of this show or want to revisit this show, you can find that under the radio tab on our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, with downloadable replays of previous shows as well as in-studio video. For
Holly Baird.
I'm Joy Baird. Until next week, we will see you in the garden.
WNOV 860 and W293CX 106.5, Milwaukee.